Hi.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to From Skirts to Scrubs. I'm Charlotte.
And I'm Alicia.
And we are two medical students trying to figure out our place in medicine by looking to the past and to current events to try and understand the impact they have on us as women in medicine and as just women in general.
Yeah, and you can find or follow us on Instagram and TikTok, which are both at From Skirts to Scrubs. You can check us out on Twitter, which is at FSTS_podcast. And you can check out our website for more information on our episodes, show notes, sources, merch, and more. And that's from skirtstoscrubs.com.
You can also subscribe to us and leave us a rating and review. Apple Podcasts and Spotify are great places to do that. And now we also have a YouTube where we're going to be posting live video content of exactly what we're doing right now. So be sure to subscribe and give us a like on our YouTube channel, and you can check out our episodes there as well.
And kind of speaking of new things, welcome back to season 5 from Skirts to Scrubs. So exciting. It's really crazy because we started this podcast 4 years ago and we didn't know where it was going to go. We didn't know how long it was going to last. We didn't know where it was going to take us. And now we're like at the end of our med school careers, which is just absolutely insane to think about how the podcast has grown and how we've grown.
Yeah. Don't know how we got here. I don't know how we're graduating med school and becoming real doctors, let alone have done 4 seasons of a podcast. Since when are we podcasters? 4 years ago.
4 years ago. But to kind of give you a sense of where we're heading, since we're going into residency, Charlotte and I have talked a lot about how we want to continue the podcast, but we want to make it more feasible for us. And so we're going to be cutting down on the length of our episodes. And instead of having our feminist corner discussions at the end, we're going to have them sprinkled throughout the episode. And we're hoping that that helps us cut down on the length, but then also helps with our editing. But then we can still keep the like juicy, good content that is worth listening to.
Yeah. It should work out great. Excited for it.
And so looking ahead to this episode, I wanted to start out this season by talking about what we probably should have talked about ages ago, which is the history of the feminist movement. We talked about this a little bit during our contraception episode back in season 1, but that's so remote. I'm not expecting anyone to go back and search for it. And so we wanted to make it really accessible here for you now as a standalone episode. And I think probably in the future, we'll be thinking more about like the history of the patriarchy. I kind of want to like do an episode on that and how that has changed and grown and whatever. Mm-hmm. But for now, I want to talk about modern feminism in the United States with some sprinkling of kind of other considerations too. But Charlotte, what do you know about the history of feminism? What do you remember from what we talked about, if anything?
Yeah, I mostly remember that there's like multiple waves of feminism and that right now we're in like the 3rd or 4th wave. I think there was a wave in the late 1800s and then another wave in kind of the late 1900s, which is I think what we talked about in the contraception episode mostly. And so there's like all these different movements framed around different issues at the time. Yeah, so I guess I know that about the waves, and then also about feminism that I know that you're going to talk about is that you have to be like really, really careful to include all women. And a lot of like feminist ideas that are very big in the media are a lot of like white feminism and feminism that doesn't include all women. Mm-hmm. So it's something to be really careful about. And especially like as someone who is a white woman, is something that I am like acutely aware of a lot of the time, or try to be and like try to educate myself on a lot. So that's also a big part of the feminist movement.
Yeah, no, definitely. Thank you for touching on that. And you're right, we are going to talk about it. And so we might as well just like dive in, I think.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So I wanted to start out by actually talking about where the word feminism comes from. So it was first coined in France in the 1880s as féminisme because it combined the word for woman, the French word for woman, which is femme, with isme, which refers to a social movement or political ideology. And that word mm-hmm. spread through European countries in the 1890s and to North and South America by 1910. But it was always really controversial. Like feminism from its conception has been a controversial topic. And similarly, like the waves of feminism are the way that we conceptualize feminism and its history, and it's the most common way that we talk about it, and it'll be the history that I review in this episode. However, just like I said before, everything about feminism has some kind of controversy, including these waves. So I wanted to briefly talk about that and like mention why these criticisms exist. But Charlotte, I'm like wondering if you happen to know or can give any thought to like, why do you think people have qualms with the waves of feminism? Like they seem to be a good thing, but like they come in waves, but like, what do you think if people have any critiques of it? Like, where do you think that comes from?
I think people are just like really adverse to change and are very comfortable with like how society is. Like people who are comfortable in society and are have that privilege don't want things to change. And I think waves of feminism and just large social movements in general often critique how society is structured, and people who are comfortable in society are uncomfortable by movements like that because it's going to change their status quo that they're happy with. So I think with feminism, we live in a patriarchal society, so people are uncomfortable with women having more rights or more, you know, jobs or things to say, or just women being people outside of the idea that a lot of people have been brought up and taught to think about women as.
Yeah, that is a really interesting way of thinking about it too, because I think, you know, I ask these questions, but I like know what I'm going for when I pose it. And I like, think this is like a helpful perspective to be like, yeah, like people are averse to change, and you're 100% right. Like they're just like very comfortable. And I think, you know, when we're talking about feminism and the waves of feminism from a feminist perspective, as in like the people who call themselves feminists, a lot of people get frustrated and argue that the waves of feminism as a concept oversimplifies a very complicated history, because the argument is that like by suggesting that one type of feminism exists at one time in history means that like there is start and end points to each wave when it's actually more of a continuous kind of movement. And of course, there's like smaller overlapping subgroups of feminism that are happening all the time. So that's like a big thing that people critique. And the other qualm that people have, I think, is that like even though in waves of feminism, there are certain issues that come to the forefront, it almost makes it seem like we've moved on from that issue when we move into another wave. And that's not always the case either. And I think especially now, you know, a lot of the rhetoric that I was reading was from like maybe a year or two ago, but a huge change that has like since kind of come about and re-entered the sphere is like sexual and reproduction and reproductive freedoms. And like those were things that the feminists of the second wave, spoiler alert, the second wave feminists were fighting really hard for and like did see a lot of change with. And like now we've kind of reverted back. And so it is interesting to think about that kind of cyclic nature of feminism, and that like things can get better, but then they can also go back and we can go backwards.
Right. Yeah. Especially today. So,
So the first wave of feminism, I think a way that we can help remember this is like thinking about the climate of the time and like what time periods this was, each phase or wave was going on in. So the first wave of feminism started in the late 19th to early 20th centuries. And the big thing of that time was the suffrage movement and legal rights for women.
I knew these things. I knew these things.
I know. Your brain's not on. Just giving you a little reminder.
The screws aren't screwed today, apparently.
It's okay. It's okay. The classic thing that we associate with the first wave of feminism is the first organized movement towards the women's right to vote in America. And that began in July of 1848 at the Seneca Falls Convention in Seneca Falls, New York. And it was organized by two women, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Lucretia Mott, who were both abolitionists living in that time. And this convention was born in some ways out of the desire to abolish slavery, yes, but far more so it was because in 1870, white women leaders were angry that black men were given the right to vote when the 15th Amendment of the Constitution was passed. But women at that time still didn't have the right to vote. And so really, it was suffrage that began the formal feminist movement in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But I would argue, and like others argue as well, that the roots of feminism in the United States are inherently racist because being upset that they didn't have something that black men had, and they saw black men as inferior to them. And so they were arguing like, no, we should have the right to vote if these people have the right to vote.
Wow. Yeah. Didn't know that at all. That's crazy.
It is really interesting and like puts a cast over this history, but it's also like really important to talk about, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
And actually, prominent black feminists of that time were women like Sojourner Truth and Ida B. Wells, but they were pretty excluded from the first wave feminist movement. Mm. Some people say that they were included. Some people say they were excluded. And I think it's one of those, like, if you were serving our purpose, then you're included. But when you say something against us, now you're excluded. Right. I think that's my general sense of it. And I think the important thing about first wave feminism to touch on is that the issue of suffrage actually did get resolved for these white women who started this movement, because in 1920, the 19th Amendment was ratified, and that guaranteed white women the right to vote.
White women.
White women. Yeah. Okay. Important to note that.
Yes. Very much.
And of course, like black women and women of color continued to face obstacles until 1965, when the Voting Rights Act was passed. But that's like so far down the line. Like, we're talking about the 1920s right now.
Yeah.
That's like ages from then.
So much happened between 1920 and 1960.
Yes.
Like, exactly. World War II happened in there, you know?
Yeah, a whole war happened.
And a whole Great Depression and like all this stuff.
And so, yeah, so much time had to pass before anything was actually made on like a women of color kind of front. But of course, that was the first wave of feminism. So we just keep moving into these new waves. Second wave of feminism is like 1960s to 1980s. And the big fights of that time that people were trying to kind of get were reproductive rights, workspace equality, and redefining gender roles. So in 1963, there was a book published that really kickstarted the second wave of feminism. Any idea what that book was, Charlotte?
A book?
It's a book.
No.
Nope. Cool. That's fine. Any idea what was going on at the time socially that maybe led women to reevaluate their roles in society, like in the 60s to 80s?
Yeah, there was like the civil rights movement.
Civil rights movement. And there was like another big thing we just talked about, kind of.
Contraception.
War. Okay, yeah. So the Vietnam War was happening. Civil rights movement was happening. A lot of like social change was going on.
Yeah.
But because I think the war is like really important to center in this discussion, because when there's war, all these men leave and then the country is left basically to be run by mostly women.
Which?
And it was.
I just read a book literally about this called The Nightingale by Kristen Hannah. An incredible book. I highly recommend. And it literally talks about like how men leave for a war, but like women have to deal with what's left behind at home during war. And like it's about these like two sisters' lives, basically, in a French,
dang,
like, in occupied France in World War II. It's amazing. But that just reminded me of that, because I'm like, I literally just read a book about this and I've been talking to my friends about it. So anyway.
Is it like a fiction book? Is it nonfiction? What's the sitch?
Yeah, I don't think it's a real story, but it's historical fiction.
Okay. I love historical. You know,
you should
I
read it.
Fiction.
It is so good. It's a little slow in the beginning as historical fiction is, but then it like picks up and I read like half the book in one night.
What's it called
it was
again?
So good. The Nightingale.
The Nightingale. Okay.
It's huge. Literally what you're about to talk about, kind of.
That is what I'm about to talk about. Because women are left at home and they are picking up the bootstraps of everyone and running everything, basically.
Yeah.
And it was because of that that women were like, wait, we should have more freedoms than we're allowed right now.
Also, we don't need to do this.
Right. Like, we don't need to work at home. We can, like, go do jobs and go live our lives. And so that really kickstarted this idea of, like, leaving the home, going out into the workplace, doing that work. Yeah. And the book that I was talking about was called The Feminine Mystique by Betty Friedan. And she was like a very prominent feminist of the second wave. And in her book, she argued that women should not confine themselves to their roles as wives and mothers at home, but can do much more. And it's because of the Vietnam War and the civil rights movement.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. They were like, wait, I can work a job and be a mother and bring it home while my husband's at war. Like,
look at her go.
I'm actually so amazing. I'm going to do this all the time.
And so second wave feminism was also known as women's liberation, which actually became a huge political force because women like Betty Friedan, Gloria Steinem, Bella Abzug founded the National Women's Political Caucus, which is essentially an organization that funds and advocates for women to be elected to political office. Hmm. And because of that, they gained, you know, political power and like funding power. And that's how they were able to put through these big legal reforms like the Equal Pay Act of 1963, which passed in Congress, where it theoretically outlawed the gender pay gap. Obviously, we know there's still a gender pay gap.
Yeah.
But in theory, that's what that did. And then, of course, like hugely important at this time was the Supreme Court decisions in Griswold versus Connecticut and, of course, Roe v. Wade, which enhanced women's reproductive rights at that time. And then Title IX was a big thing that passed at that time, and it gave women the right to educational equality. So just like a lot of big legislative changes that even though they're not perfect and like clearly things have changed for us now, they had huge trickle down effects into people's
lives.
Title
IX still around, but it is huge. Like as someone who was like, my mom was a teacher, talked about Title IX all the time and like how it applied to students and like making sure there's enough opportunities for like students and minority students and all this and that.
And this wave was when the personal became political. So if you've ever heard that phrase, that's where this comes from, because people were arguing that they wanted more than just political equality, but social equality as well.
Right.
But again, I would be remiss to not mention big, big issues that continued to persist in this wave because it was centering white women in the issues. So gaining the opportunity to work outside the home wasn't a focus for Black women. Black women were like, we've been working outside the home.
We've been working this whole time.
Employed. Yeah.
Like they're like, we want better jobs and better opportunities.
Exactly. And also, even though Black and white women both supported reproductive freedoms and like the right to abortions and things like that, Black women had way more personal and systemic concerns to address because it was one thing for them to have voluntary access to birth control, and it was another thing for them to want to end the forced sterilization of their people and like people of color and people with disabilities. That was a huge issue at that time. And while white women were trying to, you know, regain their abortion access or have abortion access, like Black women were like, please stop sterilizing us without our consent.
Yeah. And I also think like the contraceptive movement about like something we failed to talk about, I think, in that episode, because we were such podcast babies, was that like contraception was started because it wanted to stop Black women from having children. Like it was a way to like decrease the Black population. So yeah, it's, there's like good reason for people to be nervous about that. And it's something I think we failed to talk about in those episodes. Cause like I said, we were podcasting babies and we're really new to researching and doing podcasts. And so that was a mistake on us to not bring up. And it's why we rectify and talk about it now.
Yeah, exactly. And you can find out more information about that in our later episode about the history of forced sterilization, where we tried to dive more into that and want to do a better job of like continuing to talk about too as we go forward. And so actually, you know, some of the big Black feminists at the time really wanted to disassociate from the mainstream feminist movement, and they established something called womanism. So Alice Walker was a prominent Black second wave feminist, and she said in 1983, womanist is to feminist as purple is to lavender, which is the idea that they're similar, but one is more broad and more inclusive. And that's like the idea of like being a womanist is like to care about all women and all of their issues.
Gotcha. And because like feminism really started as like a white movement. So womanism's more like everybody. Gotcha.
Yes, exactly. And I also wanted to highlight the work of one of my favorite feminists, Bell Hooks, who built on a speech from Sojourner Truth. She gave this speech back in 1851. It was called Ain't I a Woman? And Bell Hooks actually wrote a book by the same name called Ain't I a Woman, Black Women and Feminism, in which she focused on the experiences and struggles of Black women and advocated for a more inclusive feminist movement. And this was like important because, again, at this time, that was like a big push that Black women were making. Some Black women even formed their own feminist organizations. And one really big one is the National Black Feminist Organization.
Cool.
So that kind of movement is still undergoing and changing and growing, but something important to mention. Unfortunately, a lot of the momentum of the entire second wave was lost when Ronald Reagan entered office, because it was after his time in office that feminists kind of became branded as like man-hating people, bra-burning people, lesbians, people who didn't care about real problems.
Yeah.
That was that. So things kind of, you know, declined. But of course, as they do, they come in waves. And so now we're moving into the third wave of feminism, which was in the 1990s. And the focus of the third wave was on intersectionality, inclusivity, and diversity.
That's what we're waiting for this whole time.
That's what we wanted. So the issues that arose in this wave started out as sexual harassment in the workplace and a shortage of women in positions of power. That's kind of what like kickstarted this. And one of the biggest law cases pertaining to sexual harassment unfolded in this third wave of feminism. And it was when Anita Hill, a well-respected law professor, testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee about her accusations of sexual harassment against Clarence Thomas, who was a nominee for the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And this is like really important, I think, because it also mirrors something that happened not that long ago with Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford. And so essentially, like, Anita Hill went up there, was like, this man sexually harassed me. And Clarence Thomas, he still ended up being sworn into the Supreme Court. Right.
Yeah.
And that was like a big year because women were so frustrated and upset by that. They called it the year of the woman because after that point, a lot of women were elected to Congress. But and also it was a time where young women who were, you know, watching Anita Hill and watching that case in real time realized what a big deal it was, because it was like the first time this was really happening where someone was coming out and being like, this person is a predator. Rebecca Walker, who was Alice Walker's daughter, Alice Walker is the actually second wave feminist that I mentioned, who talked about like purple and lavender and kind of making those connections.
Right. Yeah.
She literally said, like, after watching Clarence Thomas get sworn into Supreme Court, she said, I'm not a post-feminism feminist. I'm a third wave feminist. And the idea is that she was like, we're starting the third wave, like, we're in it. We're no longer second wavers.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so third wave feminists were also the rebellious feminists in both their social approach and in their looks. There was a period where a lot of white third wave feminists even rejected the name feminist because they didn't like that feminist was really associated with how the second wave feminists identified. And they were like, we're like more than like just feminists. Like we don't even want to be called that anymore. And a lot of this came up in like punk rock kind of like girl group stuff. So all these bands were emerging at the time and they were releasing all these songs addressing feminism and patriarchy and like anti-abuse and racism.
Yeah.
And one in particular was called Riot Girl, the Riot Girl Manifesto by Kathleen Hanna. And this was like a girl group band vibe from the 90s that was like very feminist and like punk rock.
Never heard of them. Cool.
Yeah, I had neither. But it's also important here to highlight that these groups were using the word girl specifically. And it's because they were kind of like trying to go against the second wave feminists. Like the second wave feminists fought really hard to be called women rather than girls because they were like, we're not children. We're adults. We demand to be treated with the same dignity that women and adults are treated with. And then the third waivers were like, we like being girls. Like they embraced the word girls because they like wanted to feel more empowered and like kind of reclaim that word and even make it like almost a threatening kind of word.
Interesting.
And I think there's some argument to be said about, you know, fighting against sexual harassment and the idea of like, let girls be girls, like, let like truly let young women just like grow and live and like be young women and not.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of like
all these
negativity around like girl, like you throw like a girl, you fight like a girl, like that kind of rhetoric too, of like even now in today, not in 1990, but today, people embracing like girlhood after the Barbie movie and embracing the things like are fun and girly, even if you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever. Men and boys do that all the time. Like people do the same thing they've been doing since childhood, and that's okay. But because it's like labeled as girls and it doesn't feel mature for some reason. And on the same topic, there's a TikToker I follow who is starting a brand called like Dumb Girl, I think. Someone like called her a dumb girl, or she'll get like comments like you're a dumb girl or something. And she was like, oh, maybe I am a dumb girl, but I'm also like a dumb girl who can do this and that and be successful in these ways thing.
Oh, that's cool.
She does a better job explaining it, but I thought it was kind of a cute idea.
I love that. But yeah, no, that was like a big thing for these like third waivers. They were like, we're girls, like let girls be girls.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
girls just want to have fun.
They do. But I do want to say that I think the biggest contribution that came out of the third wave was the focus on race and gender. It was the work of Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw, who coined the term intersectionality that had one of the most lasting effects on our world, on feminism, on women. But intersectionality, as you may or may not know, is the intersecting of various identities, but not just how their identities interact, but the idea that the type of oppression that comes associated with these identities is what overlaps and leads to things like minority stress and gender stress and like these things like that. And these types of oppressions can be based on race, class, gender identity, sexual identity, ethnicity, like so many things. Mm-hmm. But it's important to know that like the original definition of intersectionality is that it's like overlapping systems of oppression that affect the lives of an individual and that each individual has like these different identities.
Right.
But that was one of the biggest things to come out of the third wave. And it's still continued today, persisted, grown. Kimberly Crenshaw is still around giving amazing talks. And she has a really great podcast called Intersectionality Matters. And so she's like continuing this work. But
yeah,
it's important in that context. And then also recognizing that like a lot of queer folks came around in this wave. And like the fight for trans rights was a big part of like intersectional feminism, things like that.
Okay. Yeah. So we're like currently in the third wave.
So actually, spicy.
Oh,
spice. Surprise. There's actually a fourth wave.
Oh, I was right. I said we were in the third or fourth wave.
We are in the fourth wave.
But that, okay.
It's not, I'm not surprised though that you were a little confused because actually it's a little harder to define like when the fourth wave started and like, is this a just, are we just continuing in the third wave? Gotcha. Are we truly in a fourth wave? But I think people are kind of arguing. I think I would probably fit in the camp of like thinking we're in a fourth wave. And it's not because I think that the issues of the third wave have resolved. Like they certainly have not.
Right.
I think we're just building on the third wave, but doing it in a different way where we've now kind of the emergence of the internet and social media activism is like a really, really big change from what was happening in the late 90s and 2000s.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I do consider the fourth wave like a separate thing. There's like in the 2000s, there were blogs like Jezebel and Feministing that were around and like full feminist force. And like, I'm curious to see how like TikTok has played into this space too, because that's like so new and people, I don't think, have looked into it as much, but I do think that that is like part of our, I mean, it's a huge part of our social ethos now. And I think it like has played into our activism a ton. And then also the Me Too movement was launched by Tarana Burke in 2007, but it really took off in 2017 after the revelations about Harvey Weinstein and his sexual abuse were exposed. And so like truly 2017 and on, like we've been in the fourth wave. And a clear part two of the fourth wave was like the March on Washington in January 2017, which was in response to Donald Trump's inauguration. And there were somewhere between 3.3 and 4.6 million protesters advocating for women's rights and various social justice issues like racial equity, immigration reform, reproductive rights, environmental and LGBTQ rights.
I mean, it was crazy. I remember
it
like
was crazy.
There were rallies at Michigan that like we went to.
I know, we did.
It was like that's fun looking back, because that was like for me like the first time I like really started identifying like as a feminist and like as actually really caring about like women's rights and women's health, and was the start of me being where I am today and like the things I care about today.
Yeah, totally. I'm like getting like chills just thinking about it. It like really was such a big time. And so I would say that we're like firmly camped in the fourth wave. But yeah, if you talk to other people, they might argue otherwise. And that is okay. That is their prerogative.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. Those are like the four waves, standard, like how we think about them. But of course, they're not perfect nor universal. And there's lots of different types of layers and different types of feminism. And I did want to quickly like run through some of the subtypes of feminism and kind of what they each rally around or what they stand for, and like see which ones maybe resonate, which ones don't. And that's for you, Charlotte, but also for all of you, our listeners, like just to kind of get a sense like, oh, you know, these are really common types of feminism. And like some of these I'm like, yeah, I totally vibe with this. And others I'm like, oh, not my thing, but like still important. So there's liberal feminism, which is kind of like the mainstream, like what you think of when you think of feminism. It's this, they typically will advocate for like equal rights and opportunities through a lot of legal reform for women in spaces like education, employment, politics. And they do a lot of like anti-gender discrimination work.
Okay.
There's radical feminism, which believes that patriarchy is the root of women's oppression, and they work to dismantle it entirely by changing societal norms about what it means to be a woman.
Okay.
There's socialist feminism, which argues that gender inequality is intertwined with economic exploitation of women. In order to liberate women, need to work towards economic and social equality. There's Black feminism, which critiques mainstream feminism for its failure to address the struggles of women of color enough. And so Black feminists emphasize intersectionality and advocate for social justice movements that center marginalized women. Mm-hmm. And then there's intersectional feminism, which actually builds on Black feminism, but focuses on the oppression experienced by women with different identities and people with different identities, and works to address the diverse experiences of women in general. And then these two I find particularly interesting, and I like almost in the future, like I'm like, put a pin in this. Like I want to talk about this more. There's post-colonial feminism, which I would say is the most non-Western focused feminism. And it looks at how colonialism, imperialism, and globalization intersect with gender oppression. And they critique the Western-centered perspectives of feminism and advocate for an approach that focuses on the experiences of women in the global South, which is like typically like the Southern Hemisphere, and a lot of where like women in second or third world countries live. I think that's like a really interesting side of feminism that I don't have as much experience with, or like did in college and have lost some of it. And so like putting a pin in that, I'm like asterisk that, I'll like mark that for later. And then queer feminism focuses on the intersection of gender and sexuality and challenges heteronormative assumptions in feminism. And they are big advocates for LGBTQ plus rights, emphasizing inclusive language and activism for the experiences of folks from diverse queer backgrounds. And so those are just like some of the really common subtypes. There's certainly more, but mm-hmm. I'm like curious if any of those resonate with you, if you have any thoughts about them.
I mean, I feel like a lot of them resonate with me. I don't think I could be like, I am this one and this one only, which I feel like right. is good. But some thoughts I had on some of the various ones. The liberal one, I feel like I identify with like liberal feminist the most, especially because I'm interested in getting into like policy and like health policy, specifically like in the reproductive space. So I just identify with that because that's what I want my career path to be. If I could, you know, dream up my perfect job, it'd be like in that space. And then the radical patriarchy thing also made me think of, I watch a lot of TikTok. This is embarrassing, but I saw a TikTok the other day. This journalist, she's been doing like feminism journalism for a long time, and she reports on abortion news a lot. But she was like replying to a TikTok about people like taking each other's names and how it's like a new feminist, not new, but it's just a feminist thing to not want to take your partner's last name when you get married. And especially if you have like a male partner. And she was stitching it and saying it that like, this is because of the patriarchy. Like this whole idea is based in the patriarchy. Like, you know, this whole concept of even taking a name is completely, like, completely patriarchal, and you can't deny that. And if you are, then you're not like really considering the whole like history of the patriarchy. So that just like made me think of the radical feminist things I saw the other day. The post-colonial. That just made me think of that. I've been listening to, as Alicia recommended to me, the newest Olympian podcast, which is a podcast about...
We love you, Mike Schubert.
Yes, it's about Mike Schubert, who also did Potterless, which was also the beginning of our podcast love once upon a time. He's reading Percy Jackson for the first time, but like the whole first book, he talked about like the idea of like Western civilization and like why are things always considered... Like they talk about the Western civilization like a lot in the first Percy Jackson book. He talks about how like that's kind of problematic and that like the whole world is centered on the West. And I think it's something that we just struggle in the US, I think, in general to think about. Like that's a huge thing on social media is like, why are Americans so bad at thinking about their world outside of America? And I completely agree. And so I was just thinking about those things when you talked about the anti-colonialism.
Very interesting. Yeah, I was like, I'm going to talk about this type of feminism more. And I think I'm going to dedicate like a whole podcast episode to it because I'm just like, oh, this is very interesting. And like, I certainly don't know enough about it. And I want to know more because I think that's like really real.
Yeah. And I do think that like feminism can be hard culturally. Like there's a lot of like cultures and religions that women are, you know, treated differently, or the women in those cultures and religions like don't have the same feminist expectations that we have in our culture in the US. So like, who are we to say that like what we think is the right, correct type of feminism, because like this is the just the perspective we have on life, but there's other cultures and stuff that might think differently. And that's probably where like that feminism falls, is in that anti or post-colonialism feminism. So it would be really cool to look more into.
Yeah. And actually that kind of ties into like a question I had for you, which is like, why do you think that feminism is such a loaded word? Like, and like, what would you say to someone who doesn't call themselves a feminist?
It's interesting because I feel like growing up, I always heard that feminism was like not something you wanted to be. But I also grew up in like a very conservative family. So I think I had a lot of unteaching to do as I grew older and, you know, forming my own thoughts and things. And feminism was just like always a bad term. And even my mom would be like, oh, you don't want to be a feminist. And then like, as me and my sister became our own adults with their own ideas, we'd be like, but why? And like challenged her idea on it to the point that she started to like rethink even what she had like grown up and had learned and things like that, just spaces she had been in, and started like questioning those things because we would have discussions. And it's just like talking about like why, I guess, people are so apprehensive about being called a feminist. Like, what does that mean to them? And kind of explaining that like, to me, being a feminist is just wanting more rights for all women and like wanting that to be a part of the conversation. And if you don't agree with something, that's okay. But like, that's your own life. You shouldn't like put your own, what you don't want to do on top of someone else just because they want to do it. It's like the whole abortion discussion of like, that's okay if you don't believe in abortions or don't want them. You don't have to get one, but like, you shouldn't tell someone else you can't have one.
Right.
It's like that whole concept, but applied to like anything feminism is talking about. What does it mean to you? And kind of trying to find like a more middle ground of like, okay, what can that actually mean? Because I think it means different things to a lot of people, which makes sense because there's been many waves, and the different waves are different types of feminism. And you even said that, like, the third wave didn't even want to identify with the second wave, and that, like,
yeah,
a lot of Black women didn't want to be called feminists because it meant something else. So there's, like, a lot of things that are tied to this, like, one word, but I think it means so much more than just, like, one definition.
You're right. Like, having these open discussions is, like, helpful and important, and I kind of, like, wanted to tie us all together and end with a pearl that could maybe quickly allow us to, you know, in our lives, think like feminists. And I feel like these two questions really just go to show, like, how chill feminism can be, in the sense that it, like, seems like it's, like, a no-brainer. But to think like a feminist, you can ask yourself two questions. The first is, what about women? So, like, if you're facing a problem and, like, whatever is coming up, you can just ask yourself, oh, and, like, what about women? Like, are women included here? Where are the women? Mm-hmm. And then the follow-up to that question is, you can ask yourself, well, what women? Like, which women are being included here, and who is benefiting from this and who is not? We often talk about, like, who's here, who's being left out, and who's part of the conversation. And I think, like, those all tie together. And I think if you can, if you've ever found yourself just wondering, like, oh, well, what about women? Like, you're a feminist.
Yeah.
That's my argument. You're a feminist.
I agree. But I think if you care about women in the world outside of your own in any capacity, then, like, that's your start to your journey on feminism. Like, finding out the issues you care about and the things that you want to read and talk about and learn more about and, like, spread to the people around you. It doesn't have to be, like, all of it at once or just one thing. It's just, like, whatever you space you find yourself in and want to learn more about and spread the word on.
Yeah, exactly. But thank you for joining us. If you want to learn more about feminism or history or women or
medicine,
anything like that,
residency, or all the things,
you should subscribe to From Skirts to Scrubs, and you should leave us a rating and review. YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, great places to do that.
Yeah, you can also follow us on our social media. We have Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, all those things. And you can also check out our website for more information. We have show notes, sources, and merch, which is from skirtstoscrubs.com. And then lastly, here is to the women who have fought for us to be where we are today, like the four movements of feminism. And maybe do the same for those who come after us. And we will see everybody next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.